We call the City of Franklin's Common Council to order, a committee of the whole to order. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Mayor Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Olson.
Here.
Alderman Solomon.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Present.
Alderman Skronsky.
Council, rise, join me in a pledge of allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Take an item out of place. We're going to go with the item 2B. As you may have heard, there's an election tomorrow, and the clerk has quite a bit to do, especially with all of the complications that have come out of the County Election Commission. So, Madam Clerk, you're on.
There were two acts, Act 43 and Act 44, which drew some new assembly and congressional lines after the adoption of our initial ward plan that we did last year. The Act 44 does not impact the City of Franklin because the congressional lines did not change in Franklin. However, Act 43 did make two adjustments to some ward lines. Start with the two arrows, one on the bottom and one on the side. Those two small are the large district and that small district. When we initially adopted the ward plan, were one ward. The new assembly lines have been drawn, and that light green, zoom in more, the light green section, which is numbered Alderman of District 4, Ward 15B, has been taken out of Assembly District 82 and added to Assembly District 21. And to comply with the requirements of the state law, we now have to adopt an amended ward plan, which will switch the center square of this map from Ward 15, and it will now be named 15B. And the bottom portion of the old 15 is going to be 15A. So when I'm always harping about how we have so many wards and reporting units, we are now adding one more ward in this area, and it consists of two different school districts on the map that's showing. The crosshatched area is the Oak Creek School District, and the plain area is the Franklin School District. So we will now be adding actually two more things to look forward to in future elections. In addition to that section where we are adding Assembly District 21, in the northwest part of Franklin, Ward 22 is being split into 22A and 22B. And we're not giving them additional numbers because Ward 15 would not have been at the end with Ward 22. So we're doing an A and a B. Ward 22A is going to remain in Assembly District 82, but they have carved out Ward 22B, and it is now going to be in Assembly District 83. And, naturally, in addition to adding an additional ward, can't see it real clear on this map, but there is a straight line. If you look at the dark blue line, but then you see a straight line right under, actually right above Woods Road. The top whole portion of that ward is in the Whitnall School District, and that bottom triangle above the dark blue line happens to be in the Franklin School District. So in addition to adding another ward, we are adding another split of two school districts. So instead of 28 ballot styles, we will have 34. 32, I'm sorry, we will have 32. The city has until April 10th to adopt this readjusted redistricting board map under the Act 39 that was also adopted.
Is it your desire that the council act on this tonight?
Yes. If the city does not adopt the plan by April 10th, any resident has the right to appear before a judge, and the court will adopt a plan that the city will have to follow without exception.
And do you have a recommended motion or
There is an ordinance, and I would recommend that the Committee of the Whole recommend to the Council to adopt the ordinance in the packet, which amends the ward boundaries previously adopted by the Council.
Alderman Skronsky?
I have a question, especially two of these items affect my district. And I have a concern about that line that went parallel to the first part of Woods Road. What's going to happen with the kids going to school now? They're going to have to switch to go to Franklin or what?
Madam Clerk?
No, this doesn't change any existing school district boundaries. It doesn't change any existing aldermanic representation of the ward. The same wards still make, the same property covered by the ward still make up the same aldermanic district boundaries. The county supervisor districts did not change. Nothing changed other than one ward is now going to be split into two wards. And the reason being is that assembly district boundaries have to be have to coincide with ward boundaries. So because the assembly districts now have been changed, we have to amend our plan to coincide with what the state has approved.
So now there's going to be almost three different representatives representing for the city, especially in the two state representatives, the 83rd and the 82nd, and 21st on the other side.
Madam Clerk?
We will now have three school districts, which we've always had.
Yeah.
Three county supervisory districts, which we had effective January 1st of this year, and three assembly districts in the city of Franklin. And,
okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? This will be coming back when we reach item 8A. And the clerk, as you're all well aware, is going to go and do some work. She's probably going to be working around the clock until late tomorrow night. So with that, Madam Clerk, thank you. I'm sure when we get to the item that someone will make a motion to approve this. Second item is review of and receive a public input on a draft request for proposals for quarry monitoring services for the city of Franklin. Ms. Liberta, just I guess from my recollection, I placed X amount of dollars in this year's budget for quarry monitoring services. In the past, we had a firm called Aquifer that did these types of services. For a period of time, former Alderman Soans was doing the monitoring of the quarry. I recollect that Aquifer was the recommended contractor by the then quarry monitoring committee that came from the as a recommendation to then the common council. So what we have now, and you've tried to get a temporary contract in place so that there wouldn't be a lapse, a long period of time while the RFP process was undertaken. In the RFP process, the RFP is looking for a contract that actually would go over and above the requirements that were in place for Aquifer from the former contract, to my understanding.
I believe so. There are some changes, but it does go beyond what was previously done.
Okay, and then the quarries would have to pay back the costs pursuant to the two PDDs that are in place.
Correct. It does require that they reimburse us. There is a maximum amount between the two. It provides for approximately $42,000 for this year, with that amount adjusted by the CPI in future years.
Okay. Please proceed.
In your packets is a suggested RFP that could be used for quarry monitoring services. It is a fairly lengthy document when you include all the addendums, which sets forth the actual contract that could be used. But the real bulk of probably the interesting part of it is the scope of work that begins on page 4 that talks about what would the consultant actually be doing. And it's set forth there as far as reviewing the blast reports that come from the quarry, reinstituting fixed location blast monitoring, which is leaving a seismograph in place that will record every blast. That's ultimately what the city began doing in, I believe, around 2004. Initially in 2001, they put them in places and moved them around, but in around the 2004 time frame, the city had three what they called vaults put in place where the seismographs could be moved between them and put in place in a secure manner and left in place to record every blast that occurred. Those vaults are still available, still in good condition, and could still be used. So those would be used. I've also suggested some mobile location blast monitoring to have the consultant be aware that we want a second seismograph that can be moved around to try to pick up some measurements from a variety of locations, anticipating that it would be targeting where there's potentially complaints from residents or thinking that it's impacting their property or their area more as blast moves. So that would enable us, I think, for 20 weeks out of the year, so about 40% of the year, to have a second monitor picking up locations and be able to move it fairly freely. Because of the labor-intensive aspect of that, that is likely to be one of the costlier pieces of it. This was done from 2002 to about 2004 when the consultant at the time recommended discontinuing that aspect of the monitoring because of the logistics involved and the cost involved. I've incorporated it here since we're sort of getting this more intensive level of monitoring reinstituted again. I thought it was good to really have a thorough review to make sure that as the quarry location has changed over the year, that we were able to respond and make sure, particularly this first year, we can check every possible aspect of where concerns are over the blast measurements. So we did build that in, as well as a unit price in case we end up having to do more beyond those 20. We still know exactly what we're getting into. We also are required through the RFP that the seismographs that we use as a result of this would be placed and measure results right next to the seismograph that the quarry uses so that we can ensure validation of their equipment relative to what we are, because they continue to provide us with their own measurements too, and that relationship of the information. I think between their internal blast measurements and the ones we get, I think is one of the things that the geoscientist uses in evaluating the full nature and impact of the blast. The item number two on page five is probably the more significant change compared to past monitoring, and it's an increase in air quality monitoring, specifically requiring a portable aerosol monitor with a high volume or medium volume air sampler, using filter media designed to take PM10 correlated measurements. That's the federal standard for measuring small particulate. EPA has a standard in that. That's the standard referenced in our PDD. So that's the appropriate standard to measure. As I understand it, it's a higher level of measuring than was done before, than the EPA was previously doing. State Department of Natural Resources was doing, because it's measuring the PM10, not just the general particulate matter. And that being the case, if negative results are found, then we're right in line with the requirements of the PDD, which then gives us enforcement capabilities. This was done for 2 years, I believe, in the past, or two quarters in the past, and it was just done for 2 months, I believe, July and August, or July and September? So it was in 2004, 2005, I believe. What I've included here on item 2A on page 5 is doing it for 6 one-week periods during the year. Gives us greater flexibility in when we put it in, when they don't know. You rent these air monitors. They're very expensive, and you rent them, then they have staff come out and change the filters each day to get the actual 24-hour measurement. That gives us a greater ability to make sure if we think activity's picked up, you know, early in the construction season or late, if we have a particularly dry July and we want to be in place then, it gives us a lot of flexibility to be able to do it. Probably a little more expensive, so we'll have to see how the results come back and see if we, you know, how the 6 weeks aligns with the available resources from the quarries. It may be that we may be able to get more. It may mean that we have to look to change it or do fewer periods but for longer times, you know, two-week periods instead of week periods. But so that's the higher level of air quality monitoring. And then item three is the quarry operations monitoring. That's where three unannounced visits per month during the heavier times of the year and one during the four winter months. They make sort of a spot site visit and evaluate whether or not they're following the requirements, following the rules and regulations, following their own internal procedures for dust control, using trained staff through the consultant selected to visually monitor opacity, which is whether there's dust in the air. And that is something that was done in the past. Initially, it was done 3 times a month. Then in 2004 and 5, it was reduced to 2 times a month and only 1 in the winter. And so I've sort of combined what was done those two different during those two different periods and kept 3 times a month during the heavier times of the year and left it at the 1 during the slower times of the year that was done so that we could really stay on top of it during the construction season and the peak blasting period of the year. It then requires them to give us reports every 2 months instead of every quarter so that particularly in this first year we can really stay on top of the results and be able to respond during this first construction season if we think we need to tailor or alter our approach.
When you say we, you mean the consultant that would eventually be hired?
Well, but the city gets to direct at, you know, when, at what week the placement of the air quality monitor would be out. Which of the three vaults the fixed seismograph would be placed in during a particular 3-week cycle. So there is some involvement. Obviously, the city would be taking input and its lead from the consultants on where they think it is based upon what they've seen in the quarry operations, based upon what area each individual quarry is blasting at that time. But the RFP is written such that the ultimate contract gives city staff a role in making sure they believe that the consultant, the monitor, is making the right choices in where to place and when to place the individual monitor types.
Yeah, I mean, as you're aware, the fire department used to do all the testing, but then there was some worry on the parts of certain citizens that maybe it was too close, that the fire department may not have been doing as good a job as professionals, so that's how the aquifer contract came forward.
Well, and that's consistent with this RFP anticipates, using a consultant, keeping that independent separation from existing staff. If we find, however, that the quotes we get back are beyond the resources being provided for, or that we want to do significantly more monitoring even than this, the option does exist for the city to decide to train its staff internally, both to do things like change the air filters, to do the opacity and site inspection monitoring. Those are things that can be done, where you could send somebody away for a week of school and they could come back able to operate and set up and move the seismograph and the air monitor. So we could bring much more of it in-house. But from the experience, it seemed the intent was to get an independent firm to look at this. So the RFP has been set up with that in mind. The one point I will make, if you read the PDD and look at the items that it talks about monitoring and the standards that are there, there's one which is the air blast, which is measured in decibels, that in the past the city has not monitored either on its own or directly through the consultants or the contractor aquifer. The city's been able to rely upon the measurements provided by the quarries in that regard. And this RFP doesn't change that. I wasn't here back when this was done. I can guess that one of the reasons that was satisfactory is that if you look at the complaints as they've been filled out over the years, from 1998 to 2011, only about 3.5% of the 800 complaints had to do with the noise volume. So I think they focused the resources on the more significant concerns, which was the air quality and the seismograph, the ground shaking. So I haven't built in the new decibel monitoring since it hadn't been something that was specifically incorporated before, and there's already, I would say, at least some concern on my part, based upon the few conversations I've had, that the RFP as written will threaten the resources that we anticipate that we're able to get through the PDDs, the 42,000. Lastly, before taking any questions, I'll point out there's a minor typo on page 12. You'll see it has the word four and then has the numbers four and five after it. I didn't delete the five. So at the very, very bottom line of page 12.
Okay. Alderman Schmidt, Alderman Olson, Alderman Wilburn.
Talked about the portable seismograph, be able to move around with that, including taking it across Drexel and establishing it at some point in Red River Heights. neighborhood?
It anticipates the ability to move it everywhere. The only item that the city has to recognize is that if we move its location away from that as defined within the PDD, that if it actually finds a violation, we might not be able to use that specific example as evidence that they're violating the PDD. But for our practical purposes, for being able to monitor them to see how it's impacting different areas, we really have flexibility to put it anywhere that we want, provided we have the owner, the permission of the property owner.
One other point. The city does have stricter standards than the state does, and is that in regards to like the decibels or the blasting or the air quality or one of those?
That's my understanding. I'll actually, Joel, address that.
I believe both decibels and the ground vibrations. We have a lower level that can be only exceeded 15% of the time, and an upper level that's never supposed to be exceeded. One of those combinations is stricter than states. And their permits for quarries are all across the board. If you look at the individual permits, some of the permits set number limits, some of the permits set best management practices. So it's really, it is hard to compare them. Where they use numbers are
strictly. Alderman Olson, Alderman Wilhelm.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Frankly, I don't understand how we got away from monitoring. I think we ought to get moving on this. But I do have a couple of questions and issues. First one was, to me, my initial impression is this is a lot of work for $42,000. So how are we going to establish a priority? What we want done? We'll have to do that after bids come back. How do we know that our existing vaults are properly placed and in the proper foundation? For example, it could be on soft soils as opposed to clay, as opposed to the bedrock, as opposed to... So that's one question.
Ms. Liberta?
At the time they were put in with the guidance and action direction of the consultant who had a geoscientist who led them in that. So at this point, I'm continuing. I've just reinspected them to see if they look like they've been damaged, moved around, banged up, and two of them look in pristine condition like they were put in a month ago, and one of them just has a lot of ants in it. but other than that, two of them in particular look like they're brand new. So assuming that the national level geoscientist that they used knew what he was doing the first time, and I believe he did based on conversation, I think they're still suitable.
Given that answer, though, the quarries have shifted their operations. So it may be appropriate that we ask the consultant if our current locations are appropriate to the current mining operations.
And that's one of the main reasons I enhanced and doubled up adding the amount of mobile location monitoring that I did, doing it 40% of the year, 20 times.
And I get that, but I looked at the portable monitoring as more of a service to the residents who may experience something that we're not aware of, yeah, as opposed to the permanent monitoring.
I can see that, but at the same time, I also looked at it as that ability to target precise locations of where we know blasting to be occurring and really try and find out if we're hitting any sort of special seams or veins or anything like that that could be causing greater impact to a few localized properties than others. So
to bring this little issue to a conclusion, I'd ask that perhaps you add a line in there that the consultant should comment on the current locations of the vaults given the current operations. I have a concern on page 7, item C, where we ask the consultant to annually review the PDD and suggest changes. It's more of a legal question than anything. The PDD is a two-party agreement. Whatever the consultant says is whatever the consultant says, but unless the quarries are willing to negotiate the PDD, renegotiate the PDD, you know, we can save some money by not even worrying about that one, I would think. That's my initial comment about that.
Where is that? The 7
item one? C, page
7.
Seven. Okay. On page 9, letter G, the last paragraph. The RFP requires that the applicant, their federal employee number, that's fine, but also state that they take no exceptions to the RFP spec. If it's a true RFP, wouldn't we encourage exceptions to the spec or alternates? Because after all, we're not experts in mining. Wouldn't it make sense for us to encourage alternates and list the exceptions? I mean, this is boilerplate. I'm sure you stole from Jack. But
yeah, we do up front give the earlier on, we do give them the ability to design aspects of the work plan and make suggestions. That's really sort of a standard purchasing practice to have them identify that the form of the RFP they're not taking exception with, so that they don't later raise concerns about the form of the RFP.
Yeah, I'm not sure. As a guy that reads these things a lot, I wouldn't have read it that way. So
I think I swiped it from the last one. I'll talk with the attorney about that language.
At the top of the page, just a thing for you, Mark, item small III, at least 3, the city references. We got to strike the word the. I did object personally, because I do these a lot. Page 11, last line, planning manager will determine what question to merit response. If you get a question, you answer it. That's only fair to the RFPs. If they're a stupid question, then the bidder will look stupid to all the rest of the bidders. So you shouldn't throw out questions, because you never know what's valid and what isn't. So that's just a stylistic thing. I've been doing these a lot. Other than that, I'm good. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, real quick question, Mark. On the last item that Alderman Olson brought up, and then there was one previous, you said you stole from...
This RFP was a combination of the city's original RFP, the 2001 work plan, the 2004 work plan, and 3 other RFPs I was able for similar services that I was able to pull from across the country. And I'm thinking I took that one particularly out of our own prior stuff.
Okay, so a lot of this is coming from the RFP that was the result of the recommendation from the Quarry Monitoring Committee.
Yes. Yeah, the stuff that I've sort of added myself is a lot of the standard purchasing stuff, particularly in a professional services RFP where you're not required to take the lowest bid, where you probably noticed a lot of the bold print stuff, a lot of it even duplicated at the front of the RFP and at the end, where you're notifying them that you're reserving your rights to... In the final end to negotiate a contract with who you believe is best for it. That goes a little way towards your first comment, Alderman Olson, concern about enough money. One of the reasons I had them not only give us the prices, but then for the core services we identified, but for each of them give us unit prices and hourly rates, is so that in the end, after we've identified who we believe is the best consultant to do the work of this nature with the best professional staff, the best experience, if we have to modify the workload, we can negotiate it having fully bid unit prices and rates. So we can say, you know what, we want more air monitoring, less individual, you know, we can move it around to tailor the service the way we need it, even if we're in the middle of the contract a year and we realize for year two we like the firm, but we need to shift up the balance of the amount of monitoring done. It's set up for us to be able to have the information to do that in a competitive fashion.
Alderman Wilmer.
Okay, I have first a procedural statement regarding the minutes that put this on the agenda, and I didn't notice that until someone asked me coming in, how can we give input based on your motion that we made at the last one if we're just now being able to look at it? So I didn't catch it when I read through the minutes, or I would have called earlier, so when the minutes come up in the council, I'd like to discuss that, because it doesn't mention my fact about asking this for a citizen input. So just that one item. So I have a couple I'd like to kind of go through, like Alderman Olson did. Do you know how many consultants provide monitoring services?
No.
Do you have any idea what in the past what we've gotten for bids on this?
No, I didn't find the responses that were all used last time. I'm aware of at least two. But at that point, that's all I'm aware of. But I haven't gone looking for them.
Okay. On page 3, it talks about that the selected consultant would be expected to also coordinate with the Environmental Commission and the Plan Commission on issues which pertain to this. I'm just wondering, the Environmental Commission versus the previously we had the Quarry Monitoring Committee, which I think could still be an option. Is that
at the Common Council's, you know, can decide who. I worked with the ones that I knew and had. I incorporated the ones that I knew might be related and that had existing sitting members and were active, to my knowledge. And the reason I included environmental was I didn't later want, if we have a contract in place, and us to say, oh, Mr. Consultant, we want you to go to the Environmental Commission, them to say, no, I only have to go to Common Council or Planning Commission. I don't have to do this other meeting. So that's why I listed all of the ones I thought might get involved and that had were actively meeting.
I'm just wondering, looking at the makeup of that committee versus the Plan Commission, how many people on that committee even have any expertise or live by the quarry or have any knowledge of it. So I'm just wondering if that's the best place for it to go.
If I can make a suggestion, given that we've identified the number of meetings that they're bidding on, it would be very easy to add, or other such committee or meeting as determined by the city, and then leave yourself open to incorporate another group like that if you saw fit.
Okay, for those constituents that haven't seen this, on page 4 it allows for volunteers to have this monitoring done on their property, so just want to make them aware of that the city would be looking for permission to put these. And so if you have a concern where you have air or blasting, you might want to volunteer for that. And on page 5, let's see, then I have, it's also that FBs, I guess Jesse calls them or something. And it's toward the bottom. It says, city staff shall be responsible for identifying the resident's properties with recommendation from the consultant. And I thought it would be important to say that this might be based on previous complaints or taking complaints into consideration when identifying which properties. So if we could insert something about at least taking complaints into consideration when you make those recommendations, because it doesn't say how you will identify those. So that might be helpful. Because apparently you said you had like 800 complaints, so that would be a pretty good clue on where they might want to go. Page 7, I have additional information on complaints. Just to clarify, is the complaint process for the quarry the same as we use for all complaints? It's the written one. Online or the one you fill out, or what is the process for complaints?
It's different.
It's different. I believe there's a separate form that's used, but I'll let Joel address that.
It's online, and it's a form they have to fill out, and it's the same process. You can get a hard copy of the office or fill it out online. But from there, it's different. It goes to Michael Burr's office.
Okay, is it real obvious? Because I get a lot of, you know, calls and questions about what's the best way to do that. Is that very obvious online for people? When you go to the regular complaint page and say for Corey complaints, go here instead so they know?
I'm correct. It's on that, on the left border, kind of subheading your complaints.
Could you just double check that it's real obvious to citizens so they're getting those in the right way, please?
Yes.
And then on that same section, it talks about the amount of meetings not to exceed 15 meeting occurrences in any calendar year. I'm thinking that's a lot of meetings. That's more than one a month. And I don't know if we would really need that. I know it's a not to exceed, but I'm just thinking maybe if that was even a dozen or something, just one a month versus 15, you could just save a little bit of money on that. I don't know.
Where I came up for the 15 to put in, and, you know, obviously if we reduce it, it can save you money. They were giving reports every 2 months, so that's 6 reports. And if they have to give, come to, say for example, Plan Commission and Common Council to give the report, and then that leaves 3 extra in case there's a issue that peaks during the year, a particular problem that comes into play. So that's where the number 15 came from, so we didn't then get in the middle of the year and not have enough. If you want to be a little more conservative, that number can be reduced, and you can rely upon the extra hourly rates that are also provided if you have additional cause for meetings to come up. But that's where my thinking came from when I put that in. But I could see it wouldn't be unreasonable to reduce it.
A dozen, you know, maximum or something. Okay, then on page 9, it's it talks about list at least 3 city references, and that was the part that Alderman Olson caught with removing the word "the." But the reason why I ask how many consultants provide the services, if we're going to ask consultants to provide city references, are these municipal references that they work for? Maybe they didn't work for a city. Maybe they worked for the Corey himself. Do we want to use the word city? Do they have to be municipal? I mean, that's going to possibly eliminate the very few that we might have. Should it be a little bit differently worded so they understand that it doesn't have to be them working directly for the municipality?
I thought the parenthetical at the end of that number that says if they don't have 3 such references, just provide a statement to that. So we're not looking for the fact that it's missing. So that's why I tried to cover that. If they've only worked for one city doing this, then they'll just give us the one.
And they could work for one. They could be doing it for 40 years for one municipality, I guess, is, you know. So I just wonder why you want 3 cities. Why the 3 cities? Why the 3 reference, I guess, to municipalities?
Habit. For 25 years, you've asked people to give 3 references, and just about every PO and RFP.
3 references is one thing,
done.
But 3 city references is another. That's what I'm saying. Does it have to be city? And that's going to really eliminate.
No, we can. I think the parenthetical takes care of that, but we can broaden that so that the,
okay.
The
or,
firm
or maybe
doesn't
switch
feel
it around.
Like they're, yeah,
so
we'll look into
the
that.
Other one. Page 12. Says presentation before staff when the common they're to attend and interfere before the staff work group, and they're going to present this before the work groups. They're going to give a presentation before the staff work group, and then later on when you get toward the back, it talks about that the common council on page 14, the final decision on the selection consultant shall remain with the city of Franklin. If I'm going to vote on them and base it on my selection, I would feel more comfortable if the presentation was given to me. I can't tell the difference between these consultants, and I think the constituents out here would probably be more comfortable if they could see the presentation. It might ease their mind on what kind of consultant they're getting. So maybe a committee of the whole presentation by, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes on the same thing that each consultant gives, might be really helpful for them. The council and the citizens.
For each of the organizations? Because this is patterned more in
You're going to get it down to 2 consultants, and then you're supposed to have those 2 consultants give this presentation. And I would think the presentation would be more appropriate. And here you have an hour to give the presentation to the staff work group, but then it's you bring it to the council for the council to make a decision, and we won't see a presentation. So all we'll get is a write-up based on someone else's opinion. I personally prefer my opinion and my thoughts and inputs on something than taking it just strictly from someone else, because I might have a completely different view. I might like them from another reason than the staff does. Same thing with the constituents, or same thing with the other all here.
It's up to the Common Council if you'd like to see all of them or only a presentation from that group. I think Jack can say what they do in some of the projects where the Board of Public Works or staff has reviewed the proposals that come in, and then the contract comes forward. We sort of handed it after that a little bit.
But well, I throw that out mainly for the citizens as well, so give them something to think about, an option maybe. They want to stand up at citizen comment period before we vote on this and say they like that idea or they don't like that idea, I guess. So on page 15 and page 20, it talks about this is services per attachment A, but I couldn't find attachment A. I see appendix A, I see appendix B. But what is referred to as attachment A? So it's, like I said, it's on 15 and page 20. On 15, it's at the bottom under the basic service agreement. The contractors provide services to the city for the quarry monitoring activities specified in attachment A.
If you look on the bottom of page 20, so there isn't an attachment A prepared yet. Page 20 shows within the RFP process that what you will do is attachment A will incorporate the scope of work from the RFP and or the work plans from the consultant's RFP submission into the final negotiated work plan. So it shows that there will be an attachment A as part of the final contract. But until we actually get the RFPs, pick the consultant, look at the price, negotiate the final contract and final absolute scope of work, the attachment A isn't yet specified.
Well, wouldn't attachment A then be really important for the citizens to know about, if that's the whole thing it's going to boil down to, is what they're going to get in pretty much attachment A? And we're going through all this process, and the bottom line, they're going to end up with attachment A, which it's not here, and it won't be done, like you said, until we're ready to hire them.
Well, at this point, if the consultants all come in exactly as we've guessed with our best estimate, recognizing we're not professionals in quarry monitoring, you're going to have, it's going to parody what is in the scope of work that we just talked about.
The front. It could have significant changes based on their input or based
and,
on...
And because the RFP up front has encouraged them to give us, suggestions on ways to do it. How, for example, they're going to secure the seismograph, the one that's mobile. How are they going to secure that? It's a multi-$1,000 piece of equipment that, isn't going to be necessarily in a locked
right
area.
So I guess my statement becomes very valid in the fact that attachment A should be, the citizens out there concerned, they should be concerned about what ends up in attachment A so they get what they want and what they're happy with.
Yes,
so.
And that's what the purpose of this process is, and then you would see that specifically when the contract comes back to the Common Council for its consideration after we've gone through the process.
Okay, and I also agree with Alderman Olson's comment. These guys are always talking.
Yeah. Guys, Alderman has the floor.
That the location and the blasting areas have changed over the years, and I totally agree with them that needs to be looked at, so I would like that in there as well. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Should have said Alderman. Alderman Olson.
Thank you. There is the quarry... incident report is right there on the left-hand column under the complaint. So it's there. It could be bigger or a different place, but it's there. I have two issues. One is we have to keep in mind the scope of this RFP and what the net dollars are to the potential bidders and what their reaction will be because obviously we want people to bid on this with their best efforts. But if we line them up with a whole bunch of meetings that they don't get paid for at $42,000, they're going to say, that interesting. So we got to be careful with the number of meetings you make them show up to and make presentations at. I believe that the work group meeting should be in such a location at such a time where interested parties can come and listen and perhaps offer comments. I'm not sure how that would work, but for $42,000, I wouldn't come to six or seven meetings. There's just no money in it. It just didn't pay. And I agree that attachment A is very important for the public to see, but we won't have attachment A until after the work group does their second set of meetings. So it is what it is. There you go. Thank you.
Okay. This item, while you not allowed to vote in the committee as a whole, it is on item 8A later on in the packet. There is a citizens' comment period that's going to follow with the Common Council meeting, so if there's nothing else, is there a motion to adjourn from the committee as a whole? It's been moved. Second, under discussion, Mr. City Attorney.
Just one comment with regard to citizen input and potential presentation sessions. From the practical and from a bidder standpoint, you might say, okay, I want to go last.
Of course.
Because these will be public meetings, so you might have that quandary where maybe something gets written in the RFP that the city shall designate. They may be open to the public. That's just the way it is. Otherwise, you're going to end up flipping a coin or something and somebody will complain about it.
Business is a tough one.
Yeah. On the motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries.